You getting drinks? Yeah? You said you're getting drinks?
Didn't I just say that?
Can you get me a slice?
You're in the middle of the road, jackass!
Can you tell me where cornbread is?
Turkey!
So close to Thanksgiving.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. We are Just Another Movie Night. I'm Scott.
And I'm Joe.
And today, we are talking trash.
Talking trash.
Talking trash indeed. This is our show to review, spoil, debate, crap on, and give second chances to the hated, the lowest rated, and the much debated, and often forgotten flicks on the internet, all while asking the question, is this the worst movie ever made? And if not, what is? Because here on the show, we truly believe you can't review a film unless you know what the worst is. And today we are doing Turkey Fest.
Gobble, gobble.
Turkey Fest. This is where we talk about movies that are bad, that we love. And so far we started off rocky because we started off with a movie that Joe has learned that she doesn't like. But this week, we're definitely doing a movie that I'm picking, and I absolutely love it. So today, we are talking about a movie that's tagline is Thrills, Chills, and Guitar Drills. We're talking about 1987's Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Now it's time for the fun part.
It has a 4.7 from 7,700 reviewers on IMDb. A 49 on Metacritic. It was directed, produced, and written by Deborah Brock, and it was produced by the legend Roger Corman. And shockingly, this is a part of the Roger Corman Massacre interconnected universe. Yes, before the Marvel Cinematic Universe, there was this. It consists of three franchises: Slumber Party Massacre, Sorority House Massacre, Cheerleader Massacre, and a standalone film called Sharkensaw Women's Prison Massacre. And it also has a 2021 reboot. Yeah, so that's 10 films in total. So the original Slumber Party Massacre made $3.6 million off a $220,000 budget, and it grew a large cult following, which allowed all of the sequels to be made. This film today that we're talking about only cost $500,000. And it made only $1.3 million. But it was a huge VHS success. Yeah, we're talking about Slumber Party Massacre 2. A.K.A. The Driller Killer. A.K.A. Let's Buzz.
Let's buzz.
Oh my God.
Let's buzz.
I gotta tell you something. This is the second time I've seen this movie, and I love it even more.
So here's the thing. When we first watched this movie, we watched it with our group of friends on a Monday night. We get together, we watch purposely look for bad movies, and we all pick one. And somebody picked this movie. And I don't know who it was. Maybe it was me. And, you know, the whole idea is we never know what we're going to watch. We don't watch them before. They're all movies with no one in the group has seen. And one of us put this movie on. And I don't know, I think the reaction from the room was, what in the hell is this? And just utter confusion. But the whole time, I was laughing like a schoolgirl. Because I thought, this is one of the most insanely creative and bizarre films I had watched in a long time. And it stayed with me. And tonight we watched it on a 4K double collection set of Slumber Party Massacre movies. Yeah, I own the 4K version of this. Does it need to be in 4K? Absolutely not. Do I need it in my life? Absolutely. Do I have a t-shirt? Yes. Do I want to create the killing weapon in this film? Absolutely. Just to have it on my wall and do it as a Halloween costume. I would love to. Yeah. This movie, it has grown on me. I have seen this now. This is my fourth time watching this movie.
Four times?
Yeah. Luckily, Joe Bob Briggs did this on his show.
That's right.
I watched it with him. And then I sat here and watched it again. And while I was doing, you know, whatever I was doing in my little loft here. And I don't think I even concentrated on what I was working on. I think I just watched the movie again.
And this is my third time seeing it.
And it's even, for a long time, I had a song in this movie as my ringtone, as a joke. This movie, I don't know what it is about this movie, but it is probably one of the funniest slasher films, or one of the most insanely creative slasher films with the best villain that never comes back.
Yeah.
Because what really makes me mad is that this wasn't successful enough to keep bringing this version of the Driller Killer back.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Driller Killer, I don't like him, but I like this. This is so much fun. The original Driller Killer was just an older guy, sweaty, and just just crazy in the face, and he just had a drill as a weapon.
And that's in the first one.
And that's the first one, and I feel like other versions of it are similar.
Right.
In the other sequels, the other interconnected universe of this movie where people reference each other and know about each other and have come from the same universe, the same town, and it's an oddity, this whole series. It's confusing too, because we've seen some of the other movies like Sorority House Massacre, and we were confused because it seemed like the characters were referencing characters in this, and we weren't really sure, and it was. So for a long time, we didn't know what movie was what movie until we found out that they were all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And we recently had seen for the first time another movie that one day I would love to do on the show is called Hard to Die. It's actually Sorority House Massacre 3, but they call it Hard to Die. And the characters in that constantly are talking about the movie, this movie.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they're talking about the Driller Killer. And so I was like, wait, what? What movie is this? Is this a part of this? I was so confused by it. But well, now
isn't
knowing...
there another Slumber Party Massacre, like some Slumber Party Massacre 3?
Yeah, there's 10 movies all together in all franchises. This Slumber Party Massacre and Sorority House Massacre have 3 films each.
Oh, okay. So does the Driller Killer come back in Slumber Party 2 or 3, I mean?
Yeah, a different version again.
A different version again? I like this guy who's playing the Driller Killer, man. He is okay. Tops.
All right. I mean, do we talk about the movie first, like talk it out and give facts, or do you want facts right out of the gate?
Let's talk about the movie. We can, when we get to him, we'll bring it in.
So, we start out this movie with what could easily be an afternoon after school special opening, like a Lifetime.
Well, it has that haze over the credits, like, you know, it's got that like glaze over it, like you're watching like One Life to Live or Days of Our Lives or something like that. Like
it's absolutely
mom used to watch.
And that's one of the things about this franchise I think we need to point out is it is a female directing and written series of movies. And a lot of people always say that horror, for some reason, there's a stigma on the horror genre back in the 80s anyways, that it was a male thing. And everybody always says, you know, like when a female director comes out and they do a horror movie, you always hear them being praised. Like, oh my God, it's a female horror driven movie, you know? Mm-hmm. A female directing like driven movie and written. And I'm like, this is not a new thing. This has been around for a very long time. And specifically this movie franchise
mm-hmm.
has always been women mocking the horror genre. And unfortunately, the whole idea of the spoof kind of got lost when they started taking it a little too seriously. I think it was forced upon them. I think originally this was supposed to be a spoof series, spoofing the slasher genre. And it kind of, they started taking themselves seriously. And I think that it's always been confusing if it is a comedy or if it is a horror movie. And I mean, then this one specifically is full on going for it.
Full on comedy. Yeah. I mean, it's hysterical.
The original was kind of like iffy. No one really understood it. And I got to tell you, this is one of the rare sequels that I like better than the original.
Oh, for sure.
I think the original is just a typical slasher film that I don't think is necessarily memorable.
Right. It kind of like the first one's kind of like the Mutilator. It was just like, eh.
Yes, yes.
It was just like, eh, you know, that's a thing. Okay, we know, they show us right off the bat who, like, the killer is, and we're just like, eh.
Yeah. And so, I always love that, because that this franchise is never mentioned in that whole thing, because it's also gratuitous.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's doing that on purpose, which is, yeah, you can do that too. You right. don't, it doesn't have to be a male-driven thing to be like that. And I wish this franchise was talked about more. Just like I think Catherine Bigelow doesn't get enough attention because she was doing horror too
mm-hmm.
around this time with like Near Dark.
Mm-hmm. You're
doesn't
damn
get,
right.
Doesn't get talked about. It's a weird thing. I had to bring that up because I hate that stigma that it's like a male thing mm-hmm. and that only men want to see women or and men having sex or naked or whatever. Like it's
I
such
know.
A
like come on, women are sexual beings too.
I know, and people can find each other attractive without it being like oh.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing.
Yeah.
But this movie starts off already kind of, it starts off like it is a teen, what somebody would call like a chick flick from the 80s, which is a term I hate. I've never understood that either. But you can see that idea in the opening with the font, mm-hmm. with the way that they film it. This seems like it's going to be a female-driven comedy.
Right.
Almost like a sex romp comedy for women.
Yeah, for sure.
That's how it starts out with shooting her sleeping, and we open up on our lead actress.
Crystal Bernard.
Crystal Bernard, who is from a TV show that I like, Wings.
I have never seen Wings, but I know Crystal Bernard. Didn't she end up being a country singer or something?
She was a singer too, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, she opens up the film, she's sleeping, and she's having a daydream about a guy.
And he's a pretty hunky guy, okay?
Yeah, he's like a... Yeah, he's like a cute guy.
Yeah, he's cute. So he's running up and down the football field and no shirt.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is cool, man. Because most of the time, like in movies, like from the 80s, you'll see if someone's having a dream, it's a guy about a girl.
Exactly.
But in this case, she's dreaming about a hunky guy. And I was like, oh, wow, this is good. I like it.
Yeah, it's something that you don't see very often, especially in the horror like field, like the genre of horror. You never see that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it starts out doing it instantly, thinking, making you tricked about what this is going to be.
Yeah.
But very soon, it completely shifts. After this entire nice little montage, her dreaming about a guy, you know, smiling in the sleep. And then she has nightmare visions. And then the movie changes completely. And it's like a record scratch. And it's just horror images.
It's crazy because at first I was asking you, so Crystal Bernard was not in the original movie.
No.
She's not in the first one, but she does have a connection to the first one because her sister was in the first one. Not the actress's sister, but
No actors have returned from the last one, but the characters are.
Okay.
So yeah, what we learn, we see her bunch of visions. We see what seems to be an insane asylum. Dead pigeon, a drill, a guitar, somebody with black hair, a drill going through people, a lot of screaming, and someone screaming in an insane asylum, a woman saying, don't go all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what we learn is that this is actually a character from the first one. Her name is Courtney. And in the first one, what happened was the driller killer killed a bunch of people. And she was her older sister, who I believe was named Valerie. Yeah, so Courtney's older sister, Valerie, was babysitting her in the first movie. And they were across the street. And they ran over to help. And so Valerie ended up having to fight the driller killer to save her sister. She ended up using a machete in front of her sister and killing him. And that's how the first one ended.
Mm-hmm.
That she killed
the driller killer. So she's like all traumatized.
Yeah. And so what we hear now is that when she was the little sister, And so we find out that Valerie, her sister, is now in an insane asylum from the events of the first movie.
Right. And the only reason we find that out is because we know that she lives, what's her name, Courtney? She lives with her mom, mm-hmm. and it's just the two of them. Yeah. I don't know what happened to her dad. We don't know, but
yeah, I'm not sure.
She lives with her mom, and we see her getting ready to go to school, and this is where we meet her friend, right?
Well, it's really funny because she tells her mom that she had a weird dream and everything like that, that she had a, you know, and it makes the mom worried. The mom is like worried that the same thing is going to happen to her that happened to Valerie.
Right.
That she's going to go crazy. Mm-hmm. So she seems nervous and protective, but Courtney leaves the house to go to school because she's going to be late for school. And while she's walking down the sidewalk, she sees one of the visions, which was a dead pigeon. And as she's looking at the pigeon, someone on the side of the road stops their car and says, "Hey, Courtney." And so we get the friend.
This is a funny moment because I said to you, I'm like, was this a scheduled pickup? Because, like, who do you know that just shows up at that moment in time?
Yeah.
It was so random.
Yeah, no, it's odd because we were wondering, is she walking to school? And it just so happens that her friend Amy has driven up and parked next to her and picked her up.
It just seemed like a coincidence. It was weird. So she gets in the car and then they're jamming. Can we talk about this song? I need to talk about this
song. Yeah, this is the song I had now, as my ringtone.
This is, okay, the song is I Want to Be a Convertible.
I Want to Be Your Tokyo Convertible.
I Want to Be Your Tokyo Convertible. Does that mean?
I don't know, but this is Courtney's song, and she says, "This is my favorite jam. You know, turn it up. Let's listen.
This is like one of my favorite songs." Yeah. Okay, I don't understand any of these lyrics. I was trying to listen. What is a Tokyo convertible?
I don't know, but they seem so into it.
Have you Googled?
I want to be your Tokyo convertible.
I want to be your Tokyo convertible.
Oh,
I wrote, what is a Tokyo convertible? It's an armchair.
That's amazing. And I guess the premise here is that Amy, they're talking about going to, for the weekend, going to their other friend, Sheila.
Oh, Sheila, yes.
They're going to their friend Sheila's house. Apparently, her dad has bought some kind of condo. And you're a golf course or something, and it's empty, and they're going to go there for the weekend, and they're going to have a party, and all the girls. And so they're talking about it, and Courtney's saying that she doesn't know if she can go. But since they're jamming out to Tokyo Convertible, everything is great in the world. But just then, a guy from her dream, Matt, has pulled up behind her and honked, and Amy makes her open the window and say hi to him, because Courtney's into this guy. But he seems into her instantly. Like, apparently she says, "We've went to lunch together a few times."
Oh, yeah.
So I guess that's like the meet cute. He's like, "Oh, we know this is the thing that's going to happen." Hey, Amy says, "Hey, we're going to practice. Our band is practicing over at my house. You should come over after school. We're going to be practicing with our band and you should come." And he's like, "Okay, I'll try to make it." We now cut to the entire group, and they are musicians.
Okay, you can liken them to the Go-Go's, I guess. Yeah.
I was going to say, the Gem and the Holograms.
Yeah, Gem and the Holograms.
This is very 80s. We have an entire band, and they're singing their little tune that they're performing in their garage with the garage open wide.
Well, I think they did it back then in the 80s. They didn't have like central air in your garage. You would freaking die.
Oh, that's true.
And they had to keep the damn door open or they would literally die.
So we have Sally. We have, like I said before, Sheila, Sally, Courtney. And I think Courtney is guitar.
Yeah, Sally's the drummer. And we need to talk about her because where have I seen her?
We'll get to
it. It's bothering me. It bothered me through the whole movie.
So Sally's the drummer. Sheila is the singer, and a bassist, I believe. And then there's maybe two guitarists because we have Amy and Courtney playing guitar and doing, and she's doing backup vocals, Courtney. And Matt shows up. Now, before we go up to Matt showing up, which one of these four women, if you had a guess, is a playmate?
The one with the big knockers.
Which one's that?
The one with the big knockers is not Sheila. She's smaller on top, and it's not Sally, the drummer. It's the other one. I think Amy.
So Amy, the Tokyo Convertible friend.
Yeah.
Well, you nailed it. Yeah, she is. Yeah, she. That's the only thing I can find about her. Playboy Miss January of 1982. Now, we were also talking about their age.
Mm-hmm. Now, she's at least 33.
They're all 25 or 24.
Oh, my God.
Everybody in this movie that I can find out information. The one I can't find age that completely hid her age is Sally.
Okay, who the hell is this woman? It was bothering me, and I demand that you tell me now how I know her, because I know her.
Well, her name is Heidi Kozak.
Okay.
And she is from the movie Society and Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood.
Oh my God, I knew it.
You didn't know it.
I knew I saw her. Something else. No. I saw her in Friday the 13th. I remember that. Yes.
Sheila is played by Juliette Cummins. She was in Friday the 13th, Part 5. She's also in Psycho 3 and Police Academy 4.
Wait, can we just go back? What are you jumping ahead for? That's all I know Sally from? That's it?
That's all I got. Yeah.
Oh my God.
She has like a list of appearances, one appearances on every show. But not like a main cast member.
Oh my God, I feel like I know her from something else. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, so that is our main core group of women that are going to be the focus of this movie.
Okay.
And Matt shows up and listens to them play. And then after they play, they decide to get their slice.
Well, I think I'll get something to drink. Does anybody want anything?
Yeah, can you get me a slice?
From the refrigerator. Anybody want anything from the refrigerator? Yeah, I want a slice.
I want a slice.
That's how you know what year it is.
Yes. And you know what? Anytime now that I ask for a beverage or you ask for a beverage, we have to ask for slice.
Do you have a slice? Courtney goes in and talks to Matt. And it's really cute. It's nice. You know, Matt is into her. They're capturing that teen love really well.
Yeah, they are. So, I mean, yeah. It really was. I remember this.
Yeah, slice?
Yeah.
You don't remember? Yeah, I was going to say, that's a thing.
I remember that can and everything, slice. Okay.
They still have it?
Oh, my God. Sorry, I just had to look it up.
I didn't know you didn't know it was a thing.
You know, no, I know it was a thing. I just wanted to visualize what the can looked like, and that's exactly what I remember.
But yeah, Matt and Courtney are, you know, having that whole thing where she invites Matt to the weekend getaway, and Matt's like, I have something that's going on, but I'm gonna try, and he's virtually like, I like you, I like you, and they kiss.
I think that's a cute moment. I think I really like him. He is adorable.
These two are nailing it because I feel like they really do like each other.
Yeah.
Like they have chemistry.
They do. It works. Like they have that cute little shy thing going on too.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's really cute. And I was like feeling really bad because I was like, oh man, I think this guy's going to die later.
Well, I mean, we do have a lot of visions and she keeps having dreams. But when she goes home, she has to talk her mother into
allowing her to go.
So she kind of lies about it a little bit. She says her band is going to go to that thing and they're going to like practice there. And the father invited them to use the garage or whatever.
Yep. It's also her birthday weekend.
Well, I love how that's revealed. That this way that this is revealed is really funny. Because,
it's kind of weird, actually. Yeah,
the mom is like, so I thought this weekend, after like they're sitting at dinner eating Chef Boyardee, or not Chef Boyardee,
it's Hamburger Helper.
And they're both pushing it, exactly like anybody who eats Chef Boyardee pushes around the plate for a while.
Okay, it's Hamburger Helper, not Chef Boyardee.
It's the same. Hey, you know, it's all crap on a plate.
That was good when I was living alone and poor. Now stop it.
I'll never forget when we first moved in together and you made it. And yeah. I looked at you and I said, this is unedible. And I cooked you up. I remember I made you chicken cutlets. And then you said, I've never had something so good.
Like, I had a chicken cutlet before. No, but before. I mean, like,
you were so psyched
to
not have Hamburger Helper or whatever, and you were like, holy crap.
Well, excuse me, sir. I had been on my own for a long time and very poor, so I lived on ramen noodles and Hamburger Helper.
I jaded you. That was the moment where we're like, never, we're never having this crap again.
And now you made me eat good, and you took good care of me, and now I'm fluffy. Do you see what you did? I'm fluffy.
It's all my fault.
You bring me cookies, you bring me ice cream, you make me eat good food, and I'm freaking fluffy. So
you know what makes me happy? What? You being happy.
I don't want to be fluffy.
You're not fluffy. So anyway,
so getting back to the Hamburger Helper. So her mom's like, yeah, I was thinking we'll go see your sister in the mental institution this weekend. Now, she starts crying because she's like, Mom, why would I want to go spend my birthday at a mental institution? And the mom, who's terrible, says, oh my God, I forgot it was your birthday this week. Yeah, it's terrible.
I totally forgot.
Like, no, first of all, I don't want to go to a mental institution when it's not my birthday, let alone on my birthday. So she's like, okay, you know, you can go with your friends.
Yeah, because, well, she says, why don't, she still doesn't want her to go because she says, why don't you invite everybody over here? And she goes, they're all going to be at the other thing. No one's going to be here.
It was a real teenage moment. But so the mom lets her go. Now, can we just talk about the girls in the car? There's four of them. We mentioned their names and they are all cute as hell. They're all fun. They have a great time. And I was mentioning to you, like, I've never had, like, I mean, I had friends in high school that I did this kind of thing with, like, you know, drive around and act foolish. But it was just like, I feel like they were all just really in sync with each other. I thought that was really cute, like the way they were. They picked good girls to be friends. But they go to this condo. Now, mind you, this is a whole development under construction. And I motioned to you. I was like, that is not a condo.
Yeah.
This is like a single family, 5-bedroom home. Like, what is going on here? It was like upstairs and downstairs. This is like a standalone house.
Yeah.
And nobody was there. And there was no like real, like, there's boxes and stuff unpacked. Like that were, not unpacked. And it just looked like a really nice place. But what really impressed me the most is it seemed like the house was fully stocked of food. Did you notice that?
It's fully stocked.
And there's a cellar.
I was hoping that they brought the food because we do see what they feast on. And it is a lot.
It is. They had like, so there's a wine cellar. So they had, her father had bottles and bottles of wine down there.
That's the only thing he unpacked, apparently.
They were just drinking all that expensive wine and eating corn dogs. I thought that was like the most teenage thing ever.
Corn dogs, kettle chips, slice, 7-Up, and Cheese Whiz on everything.
Cheese Whiz, yes, yes. So they're supposed to be alone here. It's just the four of them. So what do you do when you're four women and you're at a house for the weekend partying?
Well, of course, you have pillow fights.
You have a pillow fight and a dance party, and you just whip your top off and you let your boobies fling around, and that's what you do, and you pour liquor all over each other.
It's so funny that the playmate is the one that doesn't get naked.
I was like, okay, this girl has the biggest jugs. Why isn't she the one getting naked?
That reveal is funny too, by the way, because I remember the first time they show her at the band practice and she's wearing a suit and a tie.
Yeah.
Right? And she looks very 80s and automatically mm-hmm. I was like, she's cute. I like that look, that Diane Keaton look. I like it.
Yep.
And the next time you see her at this house, she's in like a bikini top.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, where were those things at?
I know. Like, how are you hiding those girls?
Yeah.
And
she didn't want to get naked. Apparently they asked her and she's like, no, I'm trying to get away from nudity.
Okay. Well, whatever. Yeah.
Which is a shame because she didn't really do anything else.
No, she didn't. But they have like their little like pillow fight and there's feathers all over the place. You know, like that cliche thing where they're just acting like fools and dancing around and flinging their tops off and stuff.
One of them does, Sheila. She, you got me soaking wet with a bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
I love that they do an entire dance off.
Yeah.
To the camera.
It's amazing. I was like, I said to you, I'm like, first of all, I've never, ever, ever been to a slumber party like this, ever. Not in high school. And I've never felt comfortable in my own skin enough to take my freaking bra off in front of other girls.
Yeah.
Like, I just would never do that.
Well, so many layers here to talk about, because this is like the, basically the introduction to them. We're slowly getting little character introductions to these characters. And we... You got little bits, and I like that they're talking over eating, and then the one character, Sally, is obsessed with eating, or talking that she has zits.
I can totally relate. I've wanted to go home myself this whole entire day. I mean, my face is turning into one big pimple. It's really embarrassing.
Sally, I don't see a thing.
Oh, you may not see it, but it's there. There's one. It's just lurking just below the surface.
That's like a running, her running premise is that she has a zit problem that she doesn't really have.
Which is funny. She sees them. You can't see a thing of, like, there's no flaws or blemishes on her whole face
and
at all.
And she is the Valley Girl version character of the bunch.
Yeah,
so
she's
the
drummer.
Everything like, oh my, you know.
Like, oh my God. Yeah.
But everything is like that. Everything's like, what are you reading?
Like, I totally just don't get it.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what Courtney's getting for her birthday.
Oh, man. He's
a boyfriend.
And then Sheila is the I guess, the wild one. She's the singer of the bunch.
She's the wild one.
It seems like Amy and Courtney are the more toned down.
Yeah, well, we learn about Sheila a little more and how crazy she is.
She's like reading a book, like a...
She stole a sex book from her brother's room.
Yeah, a Harley Quinn book, or a Harlequin. It's like one of those books, so it's like she's reading, it's like Wet and Wild.
Yeah,
why is the brother reading this book?
Yeah.
And you know, this is really great too. The brother apparently has been to this house, because in the room that Courtney's going to sleep in, there is a sex doll in the bed.
It's funny.
Yeah, the sex doll. And
the
they're
father's
like,
okay with all of it.
And Sheila, even though that this is her brother using this thing sexually, she's touching it a lot.
I know.
And I was like,
ew. What is
poking
he doing?
Poking the mouth, looking at the crotch. I was like,
No, it's gross. But she's, Sheila's definitely the wild one. And we learn just how wild she is when we see a car pull up into the driveway.
Yeah, I only wanted to set that up. The only thing I wanted to say was she got shot with the champagne, and she's like, well, first she goes, this is my favorite song, and then they do the whole dance to the song. That's when she gets shot with champagne. The whole time, the car that pulled up, is what you were just saying, is two guys get out, and we meet these two guys.
Okay, first of all, can I just say, what's his name?
Okay, so...
He's the dweebiest, most... unattractive in every single way guy, just because of his personality. Like, he's just awful.
Sorry about that. How's your headache?
Jerk.
This actor's name is Joel Hoffman, and I will say that he looks and acts like Adam Devine and Justin Long had a baby.
Oh my God, yes, he does.
Yeah.
What's his name in the movie?
TJ Myers.
Okay, TJ Myers. So,
have
first
you
of
picked
all,
up on the names in this movie yet?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Okay, because to point out the names one more time, Sally Burns, which is Sally is the lead character in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And the actress that played...
Is Marilyn Burns. Yes.
The Mrs. Bates.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Mrs. Bates is Courtney's name. Courtney Bates.
Yep.
Mrs. Bates is her mother. I don't think Amy is said anywhere in there what she is. TJ Myers, Michael Myers reference. And I don't remember what his friend's name is, but there are other references in this movie. I wrote them down. There's two cops later on, Voorhees and Krueger.
Oh my God, stop.
And the neighbors are referenced to be the Cravens.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. Well, that's kind of cute.
So these guys pull up, and there's two friends. And like I said, the one character, oh, by the way, this actor, Joel Hoffman, he is in Pumpkinhead and a movie we just did, Killer Workout.
He is in Killer Workout.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. First of all, this character is awful. He is so awful. I don't know what it is about him. He's just such a dweeb. Everything about him is just unattractive. He is just, he's just a doof.
Yeah, I wish I knew where this voice, who he reminds me of in the voice. It kind of reminds like me of Evil Ed.
Lenny and Squiggy.
Yeah, Evil Ed from Fright Night a little bit. He laughs about everything, and he's like, oh.
Is this shit? If your mother knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so annoying. Well, him and his buddy, who, and by the way, his buddy doesn't seem like a guy who would hang out with him.
That's all these movies. Yeah. It's like you wonder, how are these people friends?
Because how are these guys friends?
There's always one douchey guy who has a friend who's a nice guy. You know?
Yeah, this guy seems like a nice dude.
He is a nice guy. So these two, but here's the thing. You know, I know he's a young man, but he did peep in the window and see the girls dancing with the top off.
What happens though is that they knock and ring the doorbell because they're listening to the music and dancing.
They can't
and having
hear
a pillow
it.
Fight naked, only one of them.
And a champagne fight.
And a champagne fight at the same time, so the feathers are stuck all over them. They can't hear the doorbell or the banging on the door. So they go to the side because they hear the music and they look through the window. Mm-hmm. And the one guy said, oh my God, I didn't know this is what women did when they hang out with each other. And then this guy, TJ, says,
it's because we're dead. This is heaven.
Right.
Okay, women don't do that together. Women only do that together in 80s movies.
Yeah.
Because I have not ever been to a party like that.
Well, the girls find out that they forgot the back door was open, apparently. And so they go to wander toward the kitchen. And Sheila turns a wine bottle upside down. And I love that. And usually in these movies, they don't have the detail. It's really an empty bottle.
Mm-hmm.
But no, this is a full bottle almost. It's pouring out while she does it. It makes me laugh. She walks toward the kitchen and they jump out. And so we learn that Sheila, her boyfriend is TJ.
Now, that just blows my mind because Sheila seems, I mean, she is a wild one. So it makes sense that she'd be with a crazy guy like that. But he's just, everything about his personality, I don't understand why she's with him. It's awful.
It's wild. He is very off-putting.
He is
and
very
he gets
off-putting.
More and more increasingly off-putting as the movie goes on.
Yep.
Hey, we thought it was hilarious. Especially that weird dance you girls were doing.
Yeah.
We're busted.
Smoke them! Smoke them!
Yep.
So they kind of like meet that they're all going to be there. And the next scene is like Courtney's trying to sleep and she's sharing a bed with Amy and they're trying to sleep. And Courtney can't go to bed because TJ and Sheila are banging too loud.
It is pretty loud. But I will say that I think Courtney, like this is the first night of their like little slumber party thing. And this is the first night that she doesn't have a nightmare about the driller killer, right?
She does, because when they finally end the sexcapade, she is able to fall asleep, and then she has more dreams, and they get increasingly more violent. Because the next day, she wakes up, and she's telling Amy that she had these violent dreams, and they're getting odd.
Mm-hmm.
And in the dream, she's seeing her sister, Valerie.
Oh, okay, you're right.
Being
I remember
stalked
now.
By somebody. We only see boots, black boots with frills. And we see her screaming, and she's looking at the camera, and she's like, don't go all the way, or whatever. And we see an entire bunch of violent shots that are from this movie later on.
Yeah, she keeps having premonitions of like what's going to happen to her friends and stuff.
So Amy's kind of like, yeah. But they go to the pool. They're all hanging out at the pool in the back of the house. And she's trying to tell everybody that she had a really rough night and that she feels odd and she feels like she might want to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of like talking her out of it, but she keeps saying she has a headache. So maybe, and they're all like, maybe it's because we opened up the champagne bottles. Maybe you had too much last night. You're hungover.
Well, TJ decides that he wants to freaking throw her in the pool, which would really, like, why?
he doesn't even do that. He's like, I know a good remedy. And he goes to like massage her head or neck. And then he says, let the demons be gone. And he throws her in the pool and she sinks to the bottom and she has more visions
while she's down there. Now, I kept thinking things about this scene. Okay, so at first I was like, wait a minute. I had forgotten, you know, I did watch this movie before, but I had forgotten this whole thing. Like, was she really there in the pool? Like, or, you know, like, she was, like, dreaming, like, having, like, daydreams under the water. So I started to think, like, hold on a second. Is this all happening in her head? Like, did she really go away for the weekend? Or is this, you know, like, I kept thinking that. Like, I didn't know if she had, like, lost her mind and whatever. But it was weird because it was just such an odd scene where he threw her in the pool for what reasoning? Like, she was obviously not well. And, you know, you just throw her in there.
This guy's a douche from high school.
Yeah, he's a total douche. But then I started to think, like, okay, I feel like something's going on in her head that she's just, like, really not there. It's just all happening in her mind. But I was completely wrong about that.
Yeah, and when she sinks to the bottom, though, she sees more of this man, a guy with black hair laughing in a suit and a leather suit jacket.
Okay, first of all, his whole entire outfit is leather.
Black leather.
And it's got fringes on the jacket. All over it. Totally 80s. He's got the black gloves, the fingerless gloves. But what's even more impressive about this guy is, like, he's totally doing, like, a comedic parody of Andrew Dice Clay.
Interesting.
I mean, think about it.
I thought he was just supposed to be like, yeah, I can see that.
He smokes, he has the same hair.
And more like a weird rock star guitarist, like more like a, I get the Andrew Dice Clay meets like a Johnny Cash type of thing, but also with more of a rockabilly.
Yeah. It's like if Johnny Cash.
Because his hair is rockabilly.
And like, yeah, it's like if Johnny Cash and Andrew Dice Clay, like, clashed together, it would be this guy. Like, that's his whole look. But
all right, so we can talk about him, I guess.
Because I really want to know what this actor has done with his life since this movie, because he was so good in this movie. I it's mind-blowing.
He walked onto the testing, like the casting call.
Mm-hmm.
He walked onto the set and got so into character in front of these people that he was destroying things. And full in character, he was destroying things in the room because he wanted to do it. And he was so into it. And they said, once he did it, they were like, yep, you're the guy. This is the funniest thing ever, the information on this guy.
Tell me everything.
Okay, so Atanas Ilch? Itch?
It looks like Lich.
Lich?
Atanas Lich.
Atanas Lich?
Yeah, and if you look at his IMDb picture, he looks like Andrew Dice Clay.
He's, it's just like a picture from this, right?
Yeah.
Okay, how do you say it?
Atanas?
Atanas?
Lich.
A lich?
Yeah.
It's an I-L-I-T-C-H?
L-L-I...
No, it's I because it's a capital.
I?
L.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know how you say it. That's
well, we should know this because you're saying you think it's like Illich? I think it's Illich.
Okay, Illich, whatever.
Right, because they his family owns the Illich Holdings Incorporated, right? That means they own Little Caesars, the Detroit Red Wings, and the Detroit Tigers.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, he's
a millionaire?
I don't know anything about him. I can't find out information, but his brother and his sister are the heads of that corporation.
Is he alive?
Still? I can't find any information about him. Otherwise.
Oh my God.
I can only find out about his family.
It says that he battled bone cancer in 1999, but it doesn't say he passed away, so he must have beat it.
I hope so, because he is the best thing ever. This guy is brilliant in this movie.
I mean, it's crazy. I've never seen anything so, like, he's so, he has too much, like, tenacity.
Oh, my God. Like, he eats up every shot in this movie.
Like, he should be in movies like Rock and Roll High School or something like that. Like,
he needed to be the next Freddy Krueger. This is the character that should have kept coming back as a joke. Like, it's just too much fun not to bring him back. And the fact that they never did really aggravates me. They made their money back on this film, so it's a little odd. And it was a huge VHS hit, which means they sold tons of copies there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I heard it was they had some award for selling the most copies.
Oh my God.
On this movie. So, okay, so she's seeing more and more of him. And they save her from the pool. Actually, the other friend, TJ's friend, which I can't find anything about that actor. So I didn't even have it saved. But he jumps in the pool because he just keeps doing the best stuff.
He's a really cool guy.
Jumps in the pool without even a thought. Jumps right in the pool and gets her out of the water. They save her. And she kind of goes upstairs to lay down.
This is the part in the movie where everything just goes bonkers.
Oh, they actually say you should take a bath, like a hot bath.
You want to take a bath. So, first of all, this is awesome. I was like, I said to you, because she gets in the bath and the water's still running and the bubbles are coming out, but the water's coming out like blood. So the whole bath and the bubbles are red.
And it's not like Argento blood.
No.
It's like real blood. Yeah. It's like disgustingly black blood.
I was like, I'm like, oh my God, this actress, I feel bad for her. She's going to be covered in this shit. And I could tell you, because I played Carrie.
Oh, yeah.
I played Carrie White.
Well, you asked me to pour it all over you.
That blood does not come out. Okay. Yeah. I scrubbed and scrubbed. I needed at least 2 showers to get that blood out of the crevice of my fingernails. It took forever. So I could not imagine what she was going through. I mean, unless it was like completely, you know, it was mixed in with water, that would be better for her. I don't know how they did it.
Yeah.
But I was thinking the whole time, I'm like, oh my God, this poor actress, she's going to be completely red.
And you should think about that every time we watch one of these old horror movies about what actresses or actors have to go through for the blood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love, by the way, when you did Carrie, the neighbor's kid said, "You're a princess."
Yeah, that was one of my favorite costumes that I did. And I opened the door and I gave out candy to the kids. And I was expecting, you know, most of them were acting like, oh, gross, you know, ew. But this little girl, maybe 4 years old next to us, I was like, I almost felt bad for dressing as Carrie. Because when I opened the door, she just looked up at me and said, "Trick or treat. Oh my gosh, you're a princess." And I was like, I am a princess.
You are a princess. The princess.
It was great.
I had to bring that up. But so the blood is pouring out and overflowing onto the floor. And she gets out of the bathtub and runs out into the hallway and shuts the door. And she thinks it's over. And then the blood just starts shooting out of the door.
It was a cool effect. And I love it. But, you know, at this point in the movie, I was like, wait a minute. This is another thing. I was like, okay, is this really happening or not? Because then she screams for Sally.
Well, and she actually runs down the stairs. But while this is happening, Sally is writing a song.
Oh, Sally's song is so nice.
She is writing a song about all she wants in the world. And what she really wants the most, what she's looking for, is a pie in the sky.
Aren't we all?
A pie in the sky.
I mean, I'd like to just walk outside my house and just see like a wonderful pumpkin pie just hovering over my head and just reaching up to it and grabbing it.
It's a pie in the sky.
And then somehow a can of whipped cream just appears.
Oh my goodness. Oh, wow.
And it's just everything's right with the world.
Everything.
So I understand Sally. I get it. I understand her. I understand Sally.
What was that song? What's that song that for the longest time I was like, what are they singing? I want a pie. Oh, I want a pie of love. Oh.
No idea.
You know that song?
No.
I want a higher love.
Oh.
I want a higher love.
That's Steve Winwood.
I want a pie of love. I didn't know what the hell he was saying. I want a pie of love. What is that?
That's because you were a little chunky monkey and you just wanted your pie.
I said that you were a beautiful woman who wasn't fluffy, and then you just called me a fat ass. God.
What
kind of relationship are we in? And you know what? I do want a pie of love. There's nothing like getting a pizza at the door. Oh. Extra cheese pizza.
Pizza sounds so good right now.
Yeah. So she's writing the pie song, and that's when she comes down. She says, Sally, please come upstairs. Blood is shooting out of the faucet or whatever. Sally goes up there and looks, and there's nothing there, but the water was overflowing. She's like, Courtney, you got to turn this off. And she's like, look, I don't know what's going on with me. I'm going crazy. I'm losing my mind. And Sally goes, I know what you're talking about. I'm also losing my mind. Look at these zits.
Right? Sally's the best.
So she says, look at these zits. And what a good friend not to give a shit and just to start talking about yourself. And she says, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't see any zits. And then she looks at her and we get a practical effect.
So good.
And this is a woman who was in Society.
Yes.
So if anybody has seen Society, it's also body horror and it's also prosthetics and like crazy stuff.
Watch Society.
So this is what happens here. Now, she has a zit and it starts mutating.
And melting.
Making her face turning into a giant zit until it pops all over Courtney.
It is so gross.
So she runs out screaming and she tells everybody that Sally's head exploded all over her into a giant zit and blew up.
Yeah, but this is when the boyfriend comes in. He finally makes it to the house.
Because when she's running out, she runs into him.
Yeah. And I was like, oh God, I just want this guy to go away because I know something bad's going to happen to him.
Yeah.
But
she's screaming. So they all go check out. But the thing is, there's nothing anywhere.
There's nothing there.
But what's also missing is Sally. Sally is missing.
So they call the cops, which is amazing. These two cops are such dicks.
Voorhees and Krueger.
No wonder they're dicks. But yeah, so they come and they're just like, oh, you know, were you drinking? Were you hallucinating? What kind of drugs are you on?
I love this scene because the reason that they're saying that, they're like trying to write the report, but Sally walks in the front door. She just went shopping for more zit cream. And one of my favorite bits is that the one cop looks at the camera and she says, look, kids. Right now, the kids are behind him. There's only a few people on the side of where the camera is supposed to be. So he's talking to us in the audience and he's like, look, kids, I'm sick of this tomfoolery. You know, you can't make us. You wasted 200 tax dollars today. Right. And I just love that he's looking right dead into the camera saying all this. Like it's like a right to the audience. Like, go F yourselves.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what kind of drugs this one is on, and I don't care because I don't want to have to deal with her mother and father and the fancy lawyers. But I'll tell you, Brett, something. If you jerk my chain in my town, I'll rip your lungs out.
But yeah, this is so Sally was just buying zit cream. She comes back and
it's letting TJ mock Courtney as like a Looney Tune.
Yeah.
And it's pissing off Matt and the other guy. The nice guy starts like defending. And I guess like the nice guy and Amy might be slowly
like turning into up. A thing. Yeah.
Because there's like a montage of them washing a car together and stuff like that. So he's like super nice and caring.
Yeah, he is.
And they're basically telling TJ off, like, stop being a dick.
Yeah.
I mean, threw her in the pool. So he starts wondering, is there any way that you had hit your head in the under the pool and got a concussion? And she's like, no, I didn't hit my head, but I've been seeing this crazy stuff.
Oh yeah, she's been having these hallucinations of this driller killer who, can we talk about his guitar? I really just want that guitar.
It hasn't come yet. It hasn't started yet.
But she sees it in the vision.
She sees like some weird visions of a guy dancing around around the insane asylum.
Yep. But he has a guitar in her vision.
Yeah, and I guess she sees it.
That is so rad.
Yeah. What happens next is like everybody decides to leave and leave Matt and Courtney alone. And Matt is a nice guy. And the way that you know he's a nice guy is he brought a birthday cake for her.
Yeah, such a sweetie poo. And the whole time, of course, me being like a crazy person, he puts the cake down with like 1,000 candles on it lit. And he puts it down on the bed and they start like making out. And I'm like thinking, oh my God, someone's going to get set on fire. It was so close to their bodies. I was like, oh my God, this is like nobody's thinking about this. And I was hoping that it would set the bed on fire. Oh my God, that would be so funny.
It does look like it's about to blow up the house. Yeah.
I was like, oh my God.
As they're kissing or making out, all the friends come back. And they start messing around with the instruments. And this is where we get to see that Sally doesn't know how to play drums whatsoever.
Oh my God. She cannot keep the beat at all. She is not a drummer.
Yeah. They're just messing around with all the instruments and they're having a good time. But at the same time, as she's kissing Matt, a drill comes right through his chest. And then that's when we see the Driller Killer in full form.
Full form. And she's okay. So can we just talk about Courtney running down the stairs? Right?
That happens. You have to reference how gory and crazy everything that happens in this scene. Because he actually rips Matt's hand off and wiggles it at her.
Oh, it's so fucked
it's
up.
It's like all the guts are coming out of it. Like, it's stringy. Yeah.
The guts are hanging off the drill. And, it's crazy.
And we have to mention that the Driller Killer talks in song lyrics.
He does.
Come on, baby. Rock and roll. Like a dream to you. Come on, baby. We go to rock and roll.
And he makes references to multiple songs as he talks.
He does.
So everything is like a joke. And
but it's so comedic.
He always says, I love you, baby. All right. He's fucking hilarious.
He is really funny. It is beyond funny.
Yeah.
And you're not watching a serious horror movie here. I mean, you know, the minute that you see him on screen, that this is going to be a dark comedy, like a horror comedy.
Yeah. Well, and we have to point you, because you started mentioning it. So he has a giant red guitar that has multiple spikes coming off the sides of it. But then the whole fret, I think that's, I'm not a guitarist, so I don't know. But the entire, all the way up to the top of it is the drill.
It's amazing.
So when he plays the guitar, the drill is going.
It's so good. Really want one of those.
A giant two-finger sized silver drill, the size of an arm.
Yeah, it is.
It's up in the air.
It's huge.
And the guitar itself is huge.
But it's so well done.
Yeah, it
like,
is.
Like, it's so beautiful.
It looks awesome.
It looks like an art piece.
It does.
It's just, it's amazing.
I would love to know who has that drill.
I know. How do we get the replica? I want it.
Yeah, I was thinking about how to make it. And, like, it's so neat. And I know exactly, like, what to use for the drill part, but...
You could definitely make it yourself. Yeah. However, you would have to whip out your saw. It would be a whole production.
Yeah, well, I mean, isn't that the whole point of a Halloween costume? Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we always put love into our costumes.
But, yeah, so Matt is dead, and she runs downstairs. Now, this is the first time when she runs downstairs, she is actually covered in blood.
Yeah.
So it happened.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, my God, she's crying. Matt's dead. And they're like, oh, here we go again. But she's covered in blood, so they're kind of like, what the hell? And right behind her is the Driller Killer, jumps up, and he starts, like, going to drill at her back while she's on the floor. But they, like, the two guys step in to try to, like, help her.
They see him.
Yeah, so
they all see him.
He sticks, like, the one guy, the nice guy, sticks, like, a lamp in his face, and he's slashing at TJ while he's on the floor, and he's rolling back and forth, but he gets it in the leg. He gets a little bit of a cut, like a scrape from the drill. So Sheila grabs TJ and they run outside. And the rest of them are kind of fighting him off, but they run into the kitchen, at least Amy, Courtney, and this other guy do. He tries to call 911 on the phone. And Sally can't make it into the kitchen, so she hits the wall and she turns around and he comes up and he's dance song up to her. And
dance sawing. Yeah,
dance drilling.
Dance drilling.
And yeah, he's doing his little, he does his lyrics. And he drills right through Sally into the telephone.
It's amazing. I loved it. I loved it so much. It was like, you can't get any more epic than that. Like, I felt bad for Sally. It sucked. But. Yeah.
Well, they all run out. So they're all split up. And we see that TJ's limping in the street. They can't, no cars will stop for them in the street. Apparently, some people do live in the area.
Yeah. You know what's funny is I thought they were going to do that whole, like, Return of the Living Dead Part 2, where the homes are being renovated, so there's nobody living there except for the one doctor next door.
Oh, yeah.
There's only one person next door. So I was like, okay, who's going to be the person whose house they go into? Because there's got to be at least one person. But then I saw someone driving, and I was like, oh, wow. But, of course, would you stop for someone like that?
I guess not. They're screaming. They're covered in blood.
I would be a little hesitant to do that. But, I mean, I probably ultimately would help them. Just because, but I mean, they did the smartest thing in the movie, though. They ran out the front door. No one ever runs out the front door. Sally literally ran into a wall and she got drilled.
Yeah.
So the three of them are together. And it's the guy, the nice guy, Courtney, and who is it? Amy?
Yeah. And I guess he's like, what's going on? Who is that guy? Where did he come from? And Courtney says, I dreamt of him. And now he's real.
Yeah, it's kind of like when Nancy and Kristen pull Freddy out of the nightmare.
Yes.
That kind of thing. It's like, okay, I get it. I see what they're doing. They are doing like a little Nightmare on Elm Street thing.
Yeah.
But it's fun. I mean, you know exactly what they're doing. You know, it's evident, especially for horror fans who've seen Nightmare on Elm Street. But
is it evident? We'll talk about it. We'll get to it.
Well, yeah, because he's somebody that's in her nightmares, and she brings him out. I mean, she doesn't
maybe
physically.
We'll talk. But at the end, we'll get to that. Like talking about the movie itself, because it's weird. They realize we have to get in the car and drive the hell out of here. Mm-hmm. And if we see TJ and Shelly, not Shelly,
what's Sheila, your
name? Sheila, we'll pick them up. But, oh, my God, I forgot the keys. They're in the house. And Amy's like, we also have to see if, you know, Sally's alive. We can't leave her. Mm-hmm. So he's like, you're right. So he's like, we're going to sneak in, and I'm going to find out. So his keys are on the table. They sneak in, and they get the keys, and they see that
Sally's body
is drilled bodies on the floor.
Yep.
And they get in the car. They're able to escape. No one's coming after them, because at the same time, TJ and Sheila got to a neighbor's house and are banging on the door, and no one's answering. And the driller killer has found them and attacks them. Sheila gets slashed and she runs away, and TJ dies. TJ gets drilled completely in front of this guy's house, and he comes out of the house after it all happens and goes,
damn kids.
Yeah, I think TJ says something like bummer when he gets killed. I can't really tell what he says. I think
he says bummer.
Yeah, I think so too. And now they are starting the car, right? So the one nice guy's in the car, and he's starting the car, and he can't get it to start. And then he finally starts it, and they start driving away. And they're like, oh, thank God. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have to get out of here. We have to find somebody, and we got to get to the cops. But of course, the driller killer is in the back seat.
Of course
he
is.
And he sits up and he goes,
this is dedicated to the one I love.
And he drills through the nice guy's body as he's driving.
That
so they have to stop
like,
the car, and Amy and Courtney run out while he's killing him.
They run all the way back to the house.
Yeah, run back to the house, and they go upstairs, and they board up the door with the furniture in the room.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. If this is like so 80s cliche.
They use the telephone too to call the cops.
Right. So instead of going to like some neighbors, there's got to be some people, or even running like hell, just keep running to find a phone. They go back to this house again. Like there's just no way in hell I'd ever go back to this house. But they do call the police again, and the cop is yelling at her. She's yelling at Courtney and saying, you've already called me tonight. I don't want you calling me again. This is not realistic. You guys are playing games, and don't call here again.
Yeah.
She's like, please, they're dying.
They're dead. Yeah, everybody's dead.
And she's like, and the cop's like, no, I'm done with you. Stop calling here. And I was like, really? Okay, this is not a situation where it's the boy who cried wolf. You're literally the police.
Yeah.
If someone calls you,
you have to go. Yeah.
And so then we see she throws the phone. Poor Sheila's running back to the house, and she's banging on the bedroom door, which is barricaded. How long does it take these two twits to move the dresser that's blocking the door?
Well, and I, it, she doesn't bang on the door, like you said. There's a whole thing where she gets into the house and she's hurt. And he shows up, the driller killer. And she is like crawling up the stairs. And then he turns to us and he looks at the camera and goes, this is where it gets to the good part. And then that is the truth, because he goes into an entire song and dance.
Yes, this is the best scene in the whole movie.
He sings a song called Let's Buzz.
Oh my God, this is the best scene in the whole movie.
He puts on sunglasses and does an entire dance sequence for us.
And with he does strobe lights and like all the mood lights lighting
change, and everything changes to green and reds and purple. And he does the entire dance to it, smoking a cigarette, putting the sunglasses on, and then he gets his guitar back, gets up the stairs, and he's singing Let's Buzz all the way down the hallway as she's crawling to the door. And they're like, what is that? Do you hear that? What is that? And then they're like, I think I hear
Sheila.
So they start trying to move the dresser. But by the time that they can even start doing it, the Let's Buzz song has come to an end, because he says, Let's Buzz. And he drills Sheila to death.
Yep.
So poor it Sheila. Gets quiet. The song comes to an end and it's super quiet, and they're listening to the door before they move the dresser because they're scared. So just at that moment, there's nothing. The drill comes right through the door, and all those lights, the neon lights, are shooting through the door as he's drilling
through.
It was
a cool effect, I thought.
And it's the drill must be real.
I don't know.
Because it is ripping through the door, and they keep doing it in this movie where they're drilling through things. So some of it looks pretty damn good.
It was crazy. I just want to know if anyone actually got hurt with that thing.
Yeah, I was wondering, because he keeps using it like a sword sometimes.
Yeah.
Like he drills at people, so it's definitely cutting them.
Yeah, but this is like my favorite dumb part of the movie, because now they're on the second floor, these two girls, in the bedroom. There's a sliding glass door in there?
Yeah, so it goes out to like one of those balcony porches.
Okay, it didn't look like there was a balcony. It looked like they just crawled onto the roof. I was like, what?
They actually jump onto, it's like a balcony, and there's it because it's like the vaulted ceilings. Mm-hmm. One of the parts of the roof come down near it, so they are able to crawl up on it and then jump to the next neighbor's house.
Okay.
But my favorite shot about this is he's on the roof already.
Oh, he's already there
in the moonlight, standing there in the moonlight, and laughing.
I think that's his IMDb picture, but yeah, he's just, they show like a shot of him, and he just looks like, I mean, he's the best. He's the best. He has the greatest like one-liners and stupid humor. I mean, you don't know whether to laugh or facepalm.
I can't get no satisfaction.
It's just one of those kind of movies. It's just crazy. But a lot of the time I was facepalm laughing.
I'm not even facepalming. I'm cracking up. It's like holding my face out of laughter. This guy, and he's going for it so much. He doesn't even care. Like, he seems to be enjoying the hell out of it.
Amazing. He's having the time of his life. I'm like, you're getting paid for this, dude? Like, that's amazing.
So he stalks them. They end up at a construction site. And he chases them through the construction site. Mm-hmm. And he just keeps cutting Amy up.
Yeah.
He keeps getting her.
That kill is very prolonged.
Yeah, it goes on for a bit. Like he keeps cutting her in multiple ways as she's trying to escape. And it cuts her back, cuts her face, and she keeps getting under things and crawling, and they're trying to get away. But they are up on the roof, and he's also doing another song during this whole scene.
Of course he is.
But finally, she slips and falls off like the fifth story of this building that the construction site. And Courtney grabs her hands and she says, don't let go. And then he slices at their hands. So she lets Amy fall and die.
Yeah, that sucked.
Yeah. And then she's like crying. And in the background, he's sitting through the wood, and he's just like hanging there, and he's smoking a cigarette, and he goes,
well, she broke my heart. It made me cry. So don't you know, she had to die. She had to die.
He comes after her, and she grabs a blowtorch. And one of the craziest, weirdest things, and he says, "Light my fire, baby." And she sets him on instant fire because he is wearing the most flammable clothes ever. He goes up in flames instantly.
I mean, it's just the hairspray in his hair.
Yeah. And in a cool looking stunt, someone seems to have done a burn, like a real burn, and jumped off the building because he's flapping his arms.
Do you know who the stuntman is in this?
Oh, I'm not sure. Yeah, I didn't see. But they all the way down, you can see, unfortunately, that it's right off camera, but you can still see the flame a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's like they hit a cushion or something, mm-hmm. and they're putting him out. But it's like right off camera.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he is dead. And she is now, the cops are there finally. And she's wrapped in the blanket, and they're bringing a dead body past her. And she takes the towel off the face.
It's a blanket.
I'm sorry. Towel. I'm sorry. Jeez.
The sheet.
She removes the sheet from the face, and it is Amy's dead body. And she's crying a little bit. And then Amy's eyes open up, and she starts laughing like the driller killer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see Amy, and we see Courtney just start laughing, insane. And she is in the insane asylum. And she is laughing, screaming.
So she was there the whole time.
Yeah, and then the camera pump goes back, and it is the room of the insane asylum. And then the drill from the weapon comes through the entire room. So it's like a dollhouse,
mm-hmm.
and he drills through it. And you just hear his laugh, and then is the end credits. That's it. It's only like an hour and 16 minutes.
This movie is?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it was short. It felt short.
Yeah. And we see that there's an uncut version on the DVD. We didn't watch it because it's like little scenes that they found in trailers and mm-hmm. everything, and they cut it in order. So it's probably really sloppy looking.
Yeah.
But intriguing because it's an hour and 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in what could have been removed or what could have been added to this, because they also kind of reference that Valerie was killed, because in her, when she has a dream, she wakes up and she says, she's gone. Valerie's gone.
Valerie's the sister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she is saying that the driller killer killed her in the insane asylum.
Okay.
Or I shouldn't say the insane asylum. I don't know.
You've been saying that through this whole podcast.
Is it that's like not a
mental institution.
Is that even good?
Mental health facility?
Women of the night?
I don't know.
What is it called? Oh, yeah, whatever. So, a health facility.
Whatever. Mental health facility.
So, yeah, apparently he has killed her too. And I love that in the synopsis of this movie, if you go look it up, it says that the driller killer is reincarnated into a rockabilly dance singer. Like is like a rockabilly, oh Jesus, rockabilly, like rock and roll star, is the driller killer has been reincarnated into him. I have no idea if that's what's happening in this movie. Now we have to talk about what is really happening. What are they saying with so this movie?
It's basically what I said, right?
That she was crazy the whole time.
Yes. I asked you in the pool, remember when she fell in the pool, if all of this was really happening to her. And I don't think it was. I think she was just crazy.
Because I have this weird thought that the movie is really about, like, the things that, we're being told when we were growing up that the things that were going to corrupt you, that kids get it corrupted by, right? Rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And sex and drugs. And so as she does more of these things, as she starts getting into a sexual relationship, she's being warned not to go all the way. And we see that she's a guitarist and that this rock star, the embodiment of what we're told is bad, comes for her and her friends as she starts drinking and having fun with her friends. Mm-hmm. And as a guy comes, and as she starts being sexual, he shows up.
Okay, so a metaphor?
Is this a huge metaphor for, like, what society is telling us is bad for us? Is literally the, like, he is, like, I don't know, like, the complete embodiment of what is supposed to be bad in society, coming for us to take us out. And it, kind of a horror metaphor, because all the characters named after famous horror icons.
Yeah.
And it seems to me like she goes insane after even trying to do all that and having to, you know, become the thing and set him on fire and kill him. I just kind of like, I was wondering, do you think that they're actually, we're trying to say something about that as like horror movies? If you're spoofing it, are they really going out of their way and saying, oh, what if the things that are supposed to be in horror movies that are bad, and how movies are like Friday the 13th are kind of like, it's kind of, I don't know what, how to say this properly, but it's kind of, we're told that Jason kills people who have sex and do drugs.
Yeah. I 100% agree that I think this is just that. It's a metaphor.
I think it's like a joke. If I think that they went deeper with the spoof idea of horror movies and went deeper and said, well, what if the thing that we're being told you're not supposed to do comes and kills you?
Yeah.
The embodiment of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll comes to life and kills them. I think that is incredible, and I'm so mad that this killer is not more films.
So he doesn't come back in part three?
No, this guy is never coming back.
He never comes back. Yeah. And have we seen part three?
Yeah. I feel like it's just another driller guy.
Okay, because we did watch the remake, right?
We did, and I actually like it. I think it is an interesting reboot.
I think it is too, yeah.
It's not great.
No, it's some not great, are. But it's interesting.
And I actually didn't mind it because I thought the spoofing was funny.
Yeah.
In the remake. But yeah. I said, I think it's a better movie than the movie it's remaking, because the original one I don't like. It's this one that I like because it seems to be going a little deeper into the idea and the concept and having a lot of fun with it.
This one's a hoot, man.
And it is, to me, so much fun because of that. Do I know, you know, do I think it's like great? No.
I mean,
like, I know it's bad. That's why we're doing it on Turkey Fest.
It's so bad, it's good. And I'm so glad you picked this one because I've been wanting to watch it again. I did appreciate it the first time. I actually gave it a 4. Because that is basically so bad, it's good.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with my 4.
You know, what's funny is I gave this one a 5 because I actually really enjoy it. And I just think it's kind of like tongue-in-cheek fun. A 4 does make sense in how we say it. So bad is good.
Yes, it is so bad, it's good. It is not brilliant filmmaking. It's a silly, goofy premise. But it's not bad.
There's not one time in this film where I go, this looks bad. The practical effects are actually pretty. We didn't even talk about the chicken attack.
Oh my God. Yeah. She was attacked by a chicken.
She opened the refrigerator. Oh, we forgot. I cannot believe we forgot.
But a
this.
Dead one. A dead a chicken.
A dead chicken flies out at her.
This is without one of her delusions, though.
And shoots like what Hershey syrup looking blood all over her.
Yeah. It's not really happening, obviously.
Obviously.
But it's but that's, funny.
Isn't that interesting, though, how a lot of it isn't happening mm-hmm. and then suddenly it starts happening?
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun.
And like, we also forgot to say in the end of this movie, what actually, I forgot, when she opens the sheet and sees Amy laughing, she actually wakes up. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, she wakes up.
She actually wakes up out of a dream and she starts laughing because next to her is Matt. They have had sex.
Mm-hmm.
And so she starts laughing because she realizes it was all a dream. He's here. We did have sex. After that whole birthday candle incident. And then when she goes to start kissing him in the morning, we see the hand come up on her head and it is the glove. And then it's him and he goes, I still love you, baby. And that's when she starts losing it laughing and she's in the insane asylum.
Yeah.
So it is referencing like her madness overtook her.
Yeah.
And so the whole movie might have been fake, but she just went crazy.
Yes. Yeah. I believe that.
So I think we should have said that beforehand. I forgot.
I think she just lost it. I don't even know for real if anyone actually even died.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if
No, because she basically pulled a man in her dreams out, you know, like a nightmare scenario. And I mean, there's just so much craziness about this movie. It's crazy. It's mind-boggling fun. You can't take a movie like this and be like, oh yeah, this is a cinematic masterpiece, because it's not. It's just fun. It's stupid. It's stupid, but it's fun. It makes you laugh, and you have to just have an open mind when you watch it. This is not going to be a Schindler's List type movie. This is
Schindler's List.
I mean, the guy's called Driller Killer, for God's sake. So are you sticking with your 5 or you're coming down?
I mean, a 5 is very mediocre. It's always in that, it's kind of forgettable. I enjoy this movie, but I wanted to elevate it out of the so bad it's good, because I actually think it's kind of creative, and it's kind of, there isn't anything I just truly hate about it. I think it is too short. I think that some of the characters like TJ are maybe a little too annoying.
TJ's awful. He is.
But I think that's kind of purpose, a part of that mocking.
Yeah, well, they have to add every single cliche in there.
Yeah,
you know?
I think
the
so,
the nice
too.
Guy, the dickhead, you know, the promiscuous girl, you know, it has to be like that.
Yeah, I think that was the purpose, and so I don't hate that. And I actually think this lead actress is good in this.
Yeah, she is. Crystal Bernard.
Yeah, she's not bad, and I don't particularly think any of the guys really are. Anybody, I mean, in the movie, none of the actors are bad. So I have a hard time saying anything really, really negative about the film. Although I do know it is weird. It is cheesy. Mm-hmm. And somebody might not be able to laugh at that cheese. And I still say, well, that's nonsense. But I will go with the 4 because I think that's our so bad is good. Mm-hmm. But I'm not even sure if I think this is so bad. I think it's kind of good. So I know it's kind of, it's just weird. No, it's different.
If you think about it in terms of like good filmmaking, this is so bad, it's good.
I mean,
it is.
I guess so. It definitely, but isn't it trying to be that?
Yes, but it knows what it is. Definitely knows what it is. It
That's why
they
I appreciate
accomplished
it.
What they set out
exactly.
to do. But they also didn't set out to make a masterpiece either. They knew exactly what they were doing. It was going to be a jokey joke. And that's exactly what it is. So you have to look at it for what it is. This is not, you know, a 10-star movie.
I think you're talking me into what I'm saying, though. Because you think a movie like Young Frankenstein, right? It's ridiculous. It's cheesy. It's silly. It is spoofing on something else while making its own thing. And instead of seeing it as so cheesy, so ridiculous, so goofy, we see it as brilliant. Why? What's the difference, though? Because this movie isn't going far enough, or isn't embracing the cheese more?
Well, I understand your comparison here, but also I don't understand it, because when you take like a masterpiece like Young Frankenstein, not only do you have, you know, class A actors in this movie, they also deliver the lines in such like a funny, dry way that it's not overly goofy. It's funny and goofy, but not over the top.
But then I would say to you that Young Frankenstein probably had a bigger budget, and this movie only had $500,000. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I don't think the budget really has anything to do with it. I mean, we've seen some movies.
I'm just saying that, of course, everything is going to be better in a bigger budget movie. With better actors, people who are committing. Sure, this could have went farther with like movies like Cabin in the Woods and I'm trying to think of other spoofy horror movies that are kind of like messing with the genre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Cabin in the Woods and Tucker and Dale versus Evil, or I'm trying to think of another one that do it, and they do it way better because they're committing to the idea, but also taking it a little seriously. I think this movie might, of course, goes a little too meta and too like capturing exactly what they're doing without like spoofing. You know, I think the spoofing is there, but it's like very under. Like the fact, I feel like the movie is like a typical slasher that all of a sudden has a comedic element of a dancing killer. You know, so it comes out of nowhere and shocks people. But I think that's what's kind of like interesting about it, what elevates it. But I'm going to go with a 4. I'll just stick with you because I know I'm arguing too much. But
I think you know exactly what this movie is. It's a goof. I mean,
yeah, I'm just saying
Frankenstein had a budget of $2.8 million. That's probably because they had, like I said, you know, A-list actors. And also Mel Brooks, you know, so
yeah, no, that was my point.
Yeah.
They got A-listers. This movie has a bunch of unknowns.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think they went for slapsticky in this. And I think that Young Frankenstein, even though they had a little bit of slapstick going on, it wasn't as ridiculous as this was.
Oh, this is absolutely. But you have to admit that this feels like a very typical slasher. And then all of a sudden just shifts. And yeah. You're like, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to kind of appreciate that.
Yeah.
Want to like it more, but I will be 4. All but right. it does make me really value how weird it is and how different it is. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that oddity. You know what I mean?
I get it. I get it.
Now that we said all that.
All right. So that brings us to our segment of why we can't have nice things, where I read out the two extremes of internet reviews, a 1-star and a 10-star review, as proof that people ruin the rating system and prove that no matter what, there's always going to be someone who messes it up for the rest of us. And today we're going to start with the 10-star review. This is a 10 out of 10. The greatest thing to have ever existed in the world of the universe. This review is only about the last 20 minutes of the film, aka the greatest moment in cinema. Granted, the first 50 minutes is just like any other film, but that is before the killer shows up. If they wanted to create some sort of sympathy for the characters, they should have made the killer the coolest guy. They shouldn't have made the killer the coolest guy in the whole fucking world. Atanas Illich single-handedly makes this my favorite movie of all time. Sure, he kills the annoying characters, but he does it with style. Everyone uses a butcher's knife or a chainsaw. Who else uses a demonic drill guitar? How many slashers dance before giving the 30-year-old teens an extra body cavity? Only Atanas Illich, the driller killer, buy this movie.
So I love this person. They get me. But I will say, the entire world of the universe?
Yes, the entire world of the universe.
That is the hardest part for me to get my head around.
The entire world of the universe. Yes. Okay, so this one is a 1 out of 10. This is titled The Pits. Slumber Party Massacre 2 is the kind of movie you can laugh about afterwards, but is the opposite of fun while you watch it. It's more of a ripoff of The Go-Go's and the Nightmare on Elm Street movies than a sequel to Slumber Party Massacre. It's a painfully bad experience. There is little nudity to talk about and zero thrills.
Okay.
The Dice Clay copycat villain is as ridiculous as his guitar drill. There are at least 5 songs in this movie that are so bad it's even a stretch to call them songs. This movie isn't even good camp. It's just a really stupid waste of time.
Okay. I mean, that's sad. That's sad. I mean, this is a person who's judging a movie's worth off of nudity.
Yeah, well.
So, I mean, that was just one aspect of it.
I mean, everybody likes, you know, a nice big pair of honkers every now and then, but it's not always necessary.
It isn't necessary. It shouldn't make or break anything. Of course, we want, you know, all that cliche that we've kind of expected in a slasher. But what I love is that this person knew what this movie might have been referencing,
mm-hmm.
is some of the elements from other movies, and that the person actually is grasping that this is and always was intended as a spoof series.
Yeah.
And still knows it's there, is right on the idea of it, but can't see the flip of it.
Right.
That this is spoofing those movies purposely. So they're missing out completely on the idea. He's missing
the point, yeah.
So I think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with the other guy and say best movie of the whole fucking world in the universe. Right? The world of the universe.
The best movie in the whole world of the universe. It is not.
I love it. I love this movie. I'm so glad I got to talk about it. I know I might have ranted a lot, but I do respect the hell out of this movie. It is so odd that I wish it would have been more, like, more loved, so we could have had a sequel.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see the Driller Killer again.
This one.
This Driller this Killer again.
Who cares about the guy with the slick back hair and the big buggy eyes that is just running after women because it's just like, that's men killing women movies.
No fun at all. This guy was great.
Yeah. You want a guy to tap dance onto your grave. You know what I mean? You want him to strut out. I love that he goes into the worm into a breakdance move at one point. It's amazing.
He's great.
Yeah. Well, I love it. Thank you so much for letting me talk about it. And I appreciate everybody for listening. Do you have any more thoughts before we leave?
No, but I would really like to see this particular movie remade with someone fun like Glenn Powell. I think he'd make a good Driller Killer.
I love that you would want this movie to be remade.
I do. Of all I do movies. Want it to be remade this with Glenn Powell because I think he would totally ham it up and rock it.
I feel like this belongs in the series that he was on, Scream Queens. This would have fit perfectly into that.
Yes.
So, next week we're going to follow this movie up with another movie that I think fits perfectly with this movie. And that would be Chopping Mall.
Yeah.
So until next week, everybody. Not until next week. Let me say something. You know, hit us up online. If you hate this movie, I want to hear about it. Hit me up on Instagram at Just Another Movie Night and Joe at The Crafty Misfit. We appreciate it. We love your feedback. We love to hear your opinions, decisions, ideas, other things. If you feel
give
like
us recommendations.
Yeah. If you feel like saying, let's buzz, I'm with you. Let's buzz. All right, everybody, have a good one. Bye.
No, go away. You're supposed to be dead.
Is this Sally Burns?
Yes. Christ, where have you been?
I just went to the store to get some more Oxygen. And, well, I met this outrageous guy. He was such a babe. And, did I do something wrong?
You freaked out your little friends here, and you wasted about $200 of the taxpayers' money, but you didn't do anything wrong.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what kind of drugs this one is on, and I don't care, because I don't want to have to deal with her mother and father and the fancy lawyers. But I'll tell you, Brett, something. If you jerk my chain in my town, I'll rip your lungs out.
Come on, Kruger. Denny's is holding our booth.
I'm on my way. Y'all have a nice day.